This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Hyde Erdrich is here. She's a winner of the Bobbitt Award for a book of poetry by an American poet written in the last 2 years. And Rita Dove won the Bobbitt Lifetime Achievement Award. But Hyde is with us, Hyde Erdrich, and welcome, congratulations, welcome. How happy are you?
Happy is like, I've never felt a depth of thrilled and satisfied that I have from being given the award for this book.
Just think of all the contenders and that you won the prize. I mean, this is so cool.
Thank you.
So why do you think they liked your book?
You know, I am curious about that. I think that it encourages people, is what I'm getting from comments and feedback. And I have written books where I expect people to get a sort of thesis out of what I'm writing. I have a real critical bent to creating a book together. And the thesis of this one was simply about bullying and how that damages us and how I think it caused national damage.
Right.
And yeah, I think people identify with that.
Well, what I saw in it is that it really was able to make me say more in writing and to be more. And I thought that when I finished this book, I thought this pushes back the envelope one more inch. This gives us permission one more time. This is bigger than you. It is bigger than you. And I think that's why it won the award. So I want to know how you got your enormous courage.
That's interesting. I think it took a while. I mean, I'm over 50, and I had always wanted to write from a place not personal, which is flies in the face of American poetry. I did write fairly personal poems about early motherhood, but I often dealt with archetypes and created personal myths on the page, and I do a little of that in here too. But I also infused it with experiences that I actually had. I had a great childhood, very secure, but as soon as I was old enough to be in other people's presence, I found out what abuses children suffer, what young women suffer, and I saw that amplified into the world, and it created empathy.
But to write without fear. Do you know that that is what we want?
I think so.
Fear? And so was there just one day when you said, you know, I got the power, or has it been gradual?
I think it's been gradual, although there was a moment when I saw people fighting each other on social media, people who should be allies, and I realized we have to examine this, we have to speak to it. What is happening that turns us against one another? How did that happen? And so the first poem in the collection, the oldest poem, is that poem, How. You know, how did we get to this, is the end of that poem.
Well, please read it for us.
I will.
This is Hyde E. Erdrich. The E is her middle initial, and it's easy to call her Heidi. But what is the E standing for?
Ellen.
Hyde Ellen. Okay, let's hear it.
How loves... How I love you, how you, how we hang on words, how eaten with need, how we need to eat, how weevils sift the wheat, how cold it is, how thick with hoar frost, ice slick, sleet freeze, how wintry the mix, how full of angst, how gut sick, how blue lipped, how we drink a health, how we care, how easy over as eggs, how it all slides, how absurd, how yet tender we all, how wrapped in a thick coat, how battered, how slender the flesh, how we wrap ourselves, how many selves we all, how I miss you many, how I see you, how your eyes warm mine, how tiny am I inside, how enormous my need, how you open an old-fashioned satchel, how deep it yawns, how bleak this need, how like winter, how it yet catches the light, how brilliant the sun dog's perihelion, moon dog's parasaline phenomenon optic, how fetching your spectacles, how my thumb might fit alongside the slope of your nose, how my own glasses slide down the thin bridge. How ridiculous the theory of the bridge. How inane the bibble babble. How we grew to be friends. How we grew thumbs. How opposable we all. How we grew sparks. How we blew up a fire. How angry. How incensed. How we resist. How we bead up drops. How we water will not run. How we distract. How loud the dog snores. How loudly. Mm-hmm. How noisy the snow grows. How many degrees below. How we fret. How again. How we all came here. How did we come? How did we howl? Loves, how did we come to this?
Oh, what is the name of that book?
Little Big Bully.
Hyde Erdrich. You know, she's the author of 6 poetry collections and a nonfiction book, Indigenous Foods Book. She's the editor of the anthology New Poets of Native Nations, and today she's ours. I have to ask a personal question. Did you gather those all during the week into a spiral notebook when you thought of hows, or did they come one after the other?
Oh, no, that came right out. I just tapped into a sort of, babble that was going on in my head about all of the things that are frustrating. I tried to work in a couple of little Easter eggs, funny things that are in there that some people might recognize. There's a corn dog in that poem.
And your glasses sliding down the bridge of your nose.
Oh, that used to happen to me all the time. These are new glasses. But
that might have been happening while you wrote it.
Yes, I'm sure it was.
I have to mention among the content of the book, the aesthetics on the page. You really tear up that white space any way you want. You take those words and arrange them in ways they have never been arranged before. How do you do it? Is it how do you make presentation make meaning?
I think that it comes from working with visual artists. I have professional work with visual artists, mostly Native American, Indigenous visual artists. And the thoughtfulness, the intentionality of putting something in a particular place has amused me, frustrated me, and taught me a lot. So I think I wanted it to feel sculptural, to feel as if it were as broad as my thoughts. And luckily, my editor and the designers were able to give this book a large, broad format, even though I have no punctuation in it.
And that interested me as well. Also, they allowed the book to be more horizontal, mm-hmm. to provide your long line lengths. Mm-hmm. And the graphics within the sections are very symbolic, very significant, and take on form. So it's an aesthetic work of art. No doubt. And I didn't know if you were the artist, so apparently you're into the visuals as well.
Yeah, and the designer was really open to what I was trying to do. I have what I call these wedges of punctuation, and they're asterisks. And I also have a little Easter egg in there to David Bowie, who I love, and whose album Black Star I was listening to. And of course, we lost Bowie during this time, who I think is a great poet. Mm. And so there was a little tribute in there, and it fell in line with some Ojibwe imagery. And so I put the two together.
Well, people have to get the book to see it, because we're lucky we can look at the page and they cannot. And we would love another poem.
Sure.
From this Bobbitt Prize-winning book.
Little Big. Like the raw woman at the dog pound whose shoulders say she's done with some drug or someone. She's still young, but this is not about love. She tunes her ears to vicious snarls, says, yes, that one. The workers say, no, we don't think so. But she insists on that body of fury, that vibration of animal urge to hurt, to bite and bite the hand, to feed up some of what it learned, to serve it back in snaps, because she sees in him a wounded pup, the velvet ball of pug. What the dog once was. She coos low on gloves, tucks him under her arm. She knows she can, knows this one knows what it is to be used like a gun.
The couplet at the end is so remarkable and so profound, the way it's like a bullet of words. That stuck with me when I read the book the first time. That was the one poem I remembered vividly. And I thought of compassion. You know, there's so much pain really does point to compassion in this book. I wanted to say that. And I wanted to tell everyone that you were the winner of the National Poetry Series Award, too. So you're just crazy with awards. Are you tired of it?
Gosh, no.
Let somebody else have one. I mean, really.
I waited a long time to have national awards, and I tried for things for a long time. And I think poets do. They work really hard because the reward is generally not financial, but it is an honor. And the deeper the honor, such as this award,
the more you can write.
The more you feel there's a meaning and a hopefulness in it.
And it's you write about things that are bigger than yourself, and that is what the award is for, I think. In the book, there's many kinds of bullies. There are physical bullies. There are emotional bullies. Sometimes love itself is a bully. And so my question is, to be born a woman is to be bullied inevitably? Is that true? And then to be an artist and then Ojibwe, on top of that, it makes bullying almost inevitable, right?
Well, I don't think being Ojibwe makes bullying inevitable.
There was one poem, though, where that caused a direct attack.
Oh, to be bullied from outside the culture. Yeah, I think all indigenous cultures have been, oppressed and forced to submit and, you know, have maintained even so. So there's always been resistance. And what you do with a bully is you resist. And the strongest resistance is to just ignore the bully.
But will every woman experience bullying?
I hope not. But I think all people do in
yeah,
some
the
way.
Answer is yes.
Yeah, because the systems are huge.
Yeah.
The systems are huge and they are bullies. And I think that there's no way that you can avoid being the little person in some situation. It's how you respond to that's important.
I like the way you have gradations of bullying in the book. Even to someone who wants to sit at your table where he's not invited, and the persistence of that is a form, it's threatening. And so you go into their subtle forms as well as the overt forms, and we want to hear more of it. Hyde Erdrich.
This poem is Big Sir. Massive block of a man. Takes the light, turns up his chin. Sun exists to shine for him. The deep shadow of his form forms a field, a force, repulsion and pull of someone brutal and strong. Cold eclipse his proximity, shivers in heat. Something back from childhood. What we learned in the taste of grit and dirt. To get up, be safe or brave. Learned two sides, the line. Hide behind or step up, but never get between the mean mass and his light. He needs his shine. Needs that dark too, the one made for design, that blacker than black, that deep shade, trailing shadow of mad dad, bad boy, stalker, wife beater, boss. We all hide where we grew, comfortable in what we knew, where to stand off to his bad side, or we let him stand between us and them, us or them, us or them. Behemoth shadow, so terrible, his need so big. We just get smaller. Without melting, he keeps us cool. Such shade here, such screen against too bright right or dazzle of wrong. Right or right to wash the wrong. Darker than that design, dark his shadow. A cape, no one tugs. We just ski along. His toe, an excuse not to choose until he needs to hear, like the Jesus some believe craves praise, even a lame note. Behind you, sometimes stepping, on your strong, big strong, something even wrong, even to we. We so small, please, we need, please, you big sir, we please, sir, on our knees.
Mm. You are a worker bee. You work as editor, teacher, producer. What to start with is Turtle Mountain.
Turtle Mountain is the homeland of the Pemina Band of Plains Ojibwe and their relatives from the Métis Nation of Manitoba and other provinces of Canada. And it was formed in the 19th century when we were forced to give up a great territory west of Minnesota and parts of Minnesota.
And what is Wigwas Press?
Wigwas was a press that I operated to create monolingual Ojibwe language books. It was the first monolingual books for kids and for schools that were ever published. And we did get a Library of Congress listing, so I'm really proud of that. There were, I believe, reasons why books in monolingual non-English weren't allowed, but we did get a listing.
So. Congratulations on that. That is super, very good to hear.
Yeah.
Yes, and say something about your films.
First, I just want to add that I no longer publish Wigwas Press. We gave over the publishing to Minnesota Historical Society Press. And I'm
But are they continuing?
Yes, they're continuing, and I'm so happy because, you know, I was distributing out of my house, and that wasn't working. I have other things to do.
A true publisher.
Yeah. And
the
then
boxes in the basement.
Yes, exactly. There's probably still some down there I haven't found.
And your film work.
Oh, film work was so fun. I had been working with visual artists, as I said. I'd done some helping with installation and some little bit of help on film, and had a friend, the artist John Thunder, who was making animations for work. He was a professional animator for work, doing a lot of commercial animation. He was also a great painter, and so I asked him if he would do some creative projects with me. Thank goodness he said yes. We've made several short animated poems together, and it's been the delight of
And your sister was involved?
Elizabeth Day, who is another Ojibwe filmmaker, and I did some videos of Louise Erdrich's poms, and she was involved on a really cold day. It seems like good things happen to me on really cold days. We filmed her for Advice to Myself 2, a short video on her poem.
What does a curator at Amherst University do?
At Amherst College, where I'm working.
Is it a college?
Yeah, where I'm working with the Mead Museum. I am a guest curator for an exhibit that combines the collections in the special archives at the library in Native American literature, the KWE collection, with visual art by Native and other Indigenous people from the Mead Art Museum collection. So it's a multi-year project. The exhibit goes up in fall of 2023 and we'll continue with some smaller exhibits in 2024. Hmm. We'll also have a publication related to the project, and I'm the lucky person who gets to pick which art and which books.
That's what I was going to ask you. For the exhibits, do you choose the ones that will hang? Do you actually do that?
Yes, that's what a curator gets to do.
And those others that you do not wish to include, then do you find space if they are Ojibwe? I mean, do they find space?
For this particular exhibit, I'm trying to focus the center of the exhibit on works from the area around Amherst College, so southern northeast and around the Connecticut River Valley, the areas that were important to Indigenous people who are still there. So Nipmuc people are included in the exhibit, Wampanoag people, Shinnecock artists, and a few other artists from the region focusing on the connections between those artists, the artworks, and the texts in the collection, and rippling out to some other relationships.
Do you write the humanities content? That's what we used to call it. I was with NEH. Do you write the little commentaries with each painting?
I will. Mm-hmm. That will be part of my work. Although I want them to be brief. I want the context to come from the writing in the collection, which has been the long work of this project.
This is something that should take all of your day, and it just takes like 10% of what you do. So let's have another poem.
I'm trying to find a poem in the middle of the book. in the third section.
Why do you think they have different sensibilities?
Yeah, and even though it wasn't written in sections at first, I wrote the prose poems late and made the decision to make these non-numbered, non-titled, but object design-based breaks, and then I moved things around a little bit to make that work. So the third section of the four sections has larger themes outside of myself and has a lot to do with the public. There's a poem called Zeno's Indians that has 29 asterisks in it, and I cannot say that word, asterisk.
But you can put it in there 29
so
times.
So I read it for the audiobook, and I swore I will never read it again. It's just too hard.
You have an audiobook of this?
Yes.
Well, we should know where to get that.
I think it's through Penguin and easy to get when you look for the book. You can't get it through Birchbark Books, my sister's bookstore, but you can get signed copies of my book there.
And you went into a studio.
Yes, I went into a studio.
And read this whole book.
Yes, during COVID, extraordinary precautions. The studio is in Minneapolis, and they're wonderful, wonderful people. And they knew to get me a sandwich for the middle so that I didn't have tummy noises.
Oh, we don't have any, but that's okay. We'll make it up to you.
It's not as important when you're reading a book for 12 hours. You definitely need...
You know, you could open up at any page, and we would be totally...
Yeah, I'm going to read a poem that is a little bit about an Ojibwe way of thinking that was taught to me, and that is when you're struggling to do an offering, which means usually to put down something that, you know, is meaningful, food or herbs on the ground, and to you know, think about the fact that you need help from your ancestors and from the good spirits around us. So I thought, how does that help? How does it help? So when you're being put down, to think of others and put down is meaningful. So this one's called Put Down. Kneel or crouch or stoop low. Go low. Be humble in the face of danger or random rage. Have a life if you must, but hidden from the creature gaze, the saurian raptor intelligence that finds you virtually in days. Kneel or crouch or stoop, pick a clean place, they say. Rock or tree root, where you can ask help, not for yourself. Avert your eyes so you do not see, not so that you do not see, but so you are not seen. You go so low, go under, sub-radar, go to the ground, go dark, radio silent. Shiver in it, the power of it, what he controls, he owns. Whoever he keeps down, gets him up, keeps them low. Kneel or crouch or stoop, pick a clean place, they say. Rock or tree root, where you ask help, not for yourself. So there's a few poems in here about being harassed and cyber-stalked, and that's one that comes out of that feeling of how we all feel so seen, and so many people, especially women, have suffered a sort of stalking, open door in the social media world.
Say something about your line, when nothing is said, the story starves.
Yeah, you know, one power against a narcissist or bully is to just not say anything, not be part of that story anymore, because every response, like in the poem I read, Put Down, every time you are pushed down further, it makes them feel bigger because they're just not big enough inside. They're abused.
It's from weakness,
people.
Of
yeah.
course.
Well, from abuse, I think. I mean, I have compassion for the abuse because... you see, even in large public figures, you see the scared, unloved, abused physically probably person in the midst of that anger that they have against others who won't adore them.
I wish everyone would hear that said just the way you said it, because that is the story of our times, mm-hmm. and we're just waking up to it. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I wish somebody had said these things to me when I was a girl, but now there's a lot more information out there, and I think that people are helping one another to recognize when they're at the mercy of a narcissistic abuser.
So writing about this, is it a safe thing to do? Is writing a safe place where you go and you feel safe, or is it a dangerous place? Because what you're saying...
It's the only place... It's the only place I go through this sort of work.
It's the only place to be.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So sometimes safe and sometimes edgy. You know, I feel both. I feel both the edges, you know, the edges of if I get this out there, I will have companionship in these feelings and someone to talk to him about. But I also feel like, you know, what if this is seen by someone who recognizes themselves, not a specific person, but people who might be angry at a portrait of themselves.
Well, just in the strength of it. People who see strength will recoil, and there is enormous strength in this writing. I tell you, if it didn't get the award for that, I don't know what, because this is going to allow every woman to say more. And do you know that is so slow coming, even in my own poetry groups. It takes a long time for people to find the wound and the context for the wound and be brave enough to say it, you know. And so this is an entitlement for us. I'm so grateful for this book. Bobbitt did good.
Thank you.
The Bobbitt family did good. They're from Texas, and the Library of Congress awards this. So it gets the fun part. How about the line, our ancestors are always present in the past?
Yeah, I think that I was trying really hard to work through things I've been taught in my lifetime. And the idea of time as being a cultural construct, you know, we humans are barely able to understand or make sense of the universe, and obviously not very good stewards of the planet. So how do we understand things, and who came close to understanding it? And one of the things that I would have been helpful, and I think avoided a lot of mistreatment and power struggles in the world, is to understand that no one who came before us is really gone, and nobody who comes after us is really gone. We are all present in every moment, and we're responsible both to the past and the future.
Fabulous. But when you say someone taught you what you were taught, who taught you? Nobody sat me down and said, this is the way it is.
Well, nobody taught me that either in that way. Well, I mean, other than...
But culturally, do you think you had an advantage for having just the great wealth?
You know, and I must say that I wasn't raised in a traditional Ojibwe manner, but I put myself as an adult in places where I could listen. And I think listening is something that you were taught younger, so I think my family did teach me to listen. It was a big family. A lot of times I didn't have a choice. There was a lot of storytelling going on. And to listen to a story and record the words and let them work into your mind in a way that you will examine them. You can take them back and examine the words over and over again. What did that actually mean? How will that help? How would it have helped other people? If I feel something very wrong with the world, how would other people, Ojibwe people, other thinkers, how would they have thought of this, and how do they think of it now?
So your family actually sat down and told stories?
Oh, yeah, constantly. We're a big storytelling family.
There you go. There's the DNA. I knew it the minute I read this book.
Well, also my father, who passed in at the end of the year, just a few years ago, he also loved poetry, recited poetry till the end of his days in his his early 90s. And he was the one who made me memorize and perform poetry. So he gave me the courage, too.
And he's present here, too.
Oh, For sure.
Yeah. Let us have a final poem.
I'm going to read the poem that at one point ended the collection, but my wise editor had me move it. The last section is, I was thinking about my children and my students when I teach undergraduates, and I thought about how I need to speak to the future for them. So this one is called Reprieve. We did not expect the light to break into prism and the earth to cool. A new deluge, knowledge. We waited, praised, so much we did not know, we did not know. We missed the purple of snow shadow, but kept snow, snow. Mm. Our skins struggled into iridescence. Everyone grew new. We knew not who walked among us. Locks dropped off. Some felt a loss. Clocks stopped. They shut up days, walked out nights. Some gave up when Jesus did not come. Fine, we thought. We're done with dying. Now this shimmer, everlasting lake of time, where every child born is ours, every child mine.
The voice of Hyde Erdrich, and a private note. I admired her earrings made out of porcupine quills.
You gave me the gift of this conversation. So it's an so you can think of it as an exchange.
Well, I will. It is more the impulsiveness of you.
Yeah. Oh.
That's what I cared about. It was just the spontaneity, you know, of you doing something like that. The exchange is more a transaction.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's reciprocity. It's not transaction, it's reciprocity.
That's nice.
The gift a poet gets from being asked about their work is so enormous because it's such a, you hand off this book and people go privately and read it and you don't get a lot of back, you know, you don't hear, and especially during COVID, I didn't hear anything about this book. It was terribly hard because I wasn't out there reading it to an audience.
Well, you see, he's got that on the tape, right, Mike? We're going to edit that. That is so important to get in. But you know, I didn't cry, did I?
No, good job.
Thank you.
And I tried not to, too.
That is so wonderful.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You so
Thank you,
much.
Grace.
And this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. Our series is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. We are funded by Natalie Conover, the Sinipet Fund, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and Mike Turpin is our engineer.